We're going to continue this morning with our discussion of conflict resolution. And this morning we're going to focus on an event that happens after the Apostle Paul is converted, and then he goes to Damascus, or goes to Damascus, is converted. And then he stays with the saints in Damascus for a while, begins speaking to the Jews about Christianity. The Jews get mad, force him out of Damascus. In fact, they have to let him down in a basket over the wall. He eventually comes to Jerusalem, and he wants to work with the church in Jerusalem, and they won't let him. So let's begin in Acts 9, and we're going to read verses 26 and 27, and we'll have a lot more to say about what had happened, what had led up to all of that, but let's begin in Acts 9, verses 26 and 27. Somebody want to read that for us?
When he came to Jerusalem, he tried to join the disciples, but they were all afraid of him, not believing that he really was a disciple. But Barnabas took him and brought him to the apostles. He told them how Saul, on his journey, had seen the Lord, and that the Lord had spoken to him, and how in Damascus he had preached fearlessly in the name of Jesus.
Okay. Anybody ever think about that, what it would be like to stand up when the apostle, or when Saul, wants to worship with the church, and you stand up and say, I don't want him to worship here. And then you find out ultimately that he writes 2/3 of the New Testament. That's kind of like the guy who turned down the Beatles and didn't think that they were going to ever amount to anything. You know, sometimes we make wrong decisions. That was the epic wrong decision, if there ever was one. If you read in Acts, the 8th chapter, about the stoning of Stephen, what you find out is Saul is there. He may have been a participant in Stephen's stoning. At least we know that he held the coats of those people who did stone Stephen. Saul is a member of the Sanhedrin Council. In fact, he's probably one of the youngest members who was ever seated on the council. He is of the Pharisee group. Remember, the Sanhedrin is this high court of the Jews. It's made up of 70 individuals. 35 of them are Sadducees. 35 of them are Pharisees. Paul is in the Pharisee group. Okay? He has, in fact, as is outlined in the first part of chapter 9, gone to Damascus with the authority of the Sanhedrin to find Christians, put them in chains, bring them back to Jerusalem, where they would be at least imprisoned and may have suffered the same fate that Stephen has suffered. He has been a persecutor of Christians. There is no question about that. Paul doesn't question it. Nobody questions what Paul had done. In fact, after he sees Jesus on the road, remember the light that shined around him, he acknowledged him as Lord, and Jesus says, why are you persecuting me? Which is an interesting, make an interesting observation here. When you start persecuting Christians, Jesus takes that personally. There is such a close association between Christians and Jesus that it's fair to say that if you start messing with Christians, you're messing with Jesus. Just like if you start messing with my kids, trust me, I consider that personally to be messing with me. Ananias knows about all of this. Ananias is a Christian who lives in Damascus. The apostle, or Saul at this time, his name hasn't been changed yet, he gets to Damascus, and God has told him, go to Damascus, and I'll tell you what you must do. And then he appears to Ananias and says, I want you to be my messenger to tell Saul what he needs to do. Ananias doesn't want to go. Imagine arguing with God. But that's what Ananias does. He doesn't want to go. He does not. It could be that he's like Jonah in the Old Testament that we read about. Remember, Jonah is the preacher who was sent to Assyria, to Nineveh in particular. He doesn't want to go. He gets on a boat trying to go the other direction. God causes this great storm. Jonah gets thrown overboard. He is swallowed by a great fish. He spends 3 days in the belly of this great fish. He's cast out on the dry ground. He eventually repents. He goes and he preaches to Nineveh. And as he preaches, Nineveh repents. What does Jonah do? Jonah got mad. He didn't want Nineveh to repent. He wanted God to destroy Nineveh. So he goes out, he sits on a hillside, this gourd grows up, God then kills the gourd, the great wind comes up, the gourd withers and dies, and he has this conversation with God. God explains to it that Nineveh has a lot more value than this gourd, and you're mad because I destroyed the gourd. You're mad because I destroyed, because I didn't destroy Nineveh. How is that possible? Now, in some cases, or in some ways, Jonah's situation is kind of like Ananias. Jonah doesn't want Nineveh to repent because Jonah probably knows that ultimately Nineveh is going to be the mechanism by which God will carry away the northern 10 tribes. Nineveh is representative of a wicked, wicked, wicked group of people. And I'm sure that Ananias felt the same way about Saul. I don't know why Ananias didn't want to go talk to Saul. Could be that it was like Jonah. Could be that he was scared. And he has good reason to be scared. He knows what Saul has done. So for some reason, Ananias doesn't want to go. Now, ultimately, he does go. Ultimately, he relents, tells Saul what he needs to do, and Saul does it. So now Saul is with the disciples in Damascus as a teacher. He eventually, and this is all recorded in the first 25 verses of Acts chapter 9, he eventually has to escape to avoid Jewish persecution. And I want to read a couple of descriptions that Saul himself gives of the life that he lived prior to his conversion. So let's look at these statements that the apostle makes. Can I get somebody to read 1 Corinthians 15 at verse 9?
For I am the least of the apostles, who am not fit to be called an apostle, because I persecuted the church of God.
How about Galatians 1 at verse 13?
For you have heard of my former manner of life in Judaism, how I used to persecute the church of God beyond measure and try to destroy it.
Okay. This went beyond him just not being converted. He is trying to bring an end to the church. Okay? It's not like he's saying, you know, this doesn't appeal to me. I can't see it. I don't want to be a Christian. He's doing everything he can to kill Christians. Philippians 3, verse 6.
Circumcised the eighth day of the stock of Israel, the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of Hebrews, as touching the law, a Pharisee, concerning zeal, persecuting the church, touching the righteousness which is in the law, blameless.
Okay. What do you see there when he says, I'm a Pharisee of the Pharisees? Yeah, 100%. Saul was all in. How about 1 Timothy 1, verse 13?
Although I was formerly a blasphemer, a persecutor, and an insolent man, but I obtained mercy because I did it ignorantly, in belief, and unbelief.
What do you see there? I'm sorry? This is how Paul could make the statement a little bit later in his own defense. He says, I have lived in all good conscience toward God until this day. Everything I thought I was supposed to do, I did it. And I did it 100%. I was all in. When he was a Jew, he was a Jew. He was a Pharisee of the Pharisees. He was just as devoted to his religion as a Jew as he eventually was to Jesus. Okay? So that just kind of establishes something. He wanted to join the church in Jerusalem. How did he go about doing that? Any ideas?
Can you ask that again, please?
I'm sorry?
Can you ask that again, please?
Okay. How did he approach making that desire known?
He went out teaching the Gentiles.
Okay. Who did he tell he wanted to be a part of the church in Jerusalem?
The elders.
Could have been the elders, could have been the apostles.
And Barnabas, maybe. I mean, because it does say that Barnabas stuck up for him. And
okay.
Associate the disciples.
Good point.
Did he
I, yeah.
Well, I mean, he was blind for 3 days, and then after that, God told him to go to in a certain direction to meet a priest, ride with him, and then go to the apostles.
Okay. Okay. You're jumping ahead a little bit. That's okay.
I'm just going from memory.
Yeah. But I think what happened was somehow he conveyed his desire to be with the church in Jerusalem to the church. Because the record says they were all afraid of him. Okay? So if he hadn't done that, if he hadn't made this desire known to the entirety of the group, the entirety of the group wouldn't have been afraid. If he had talked to the apostles might have been afraid. If he had talked to Barnabas, well, Barnabas wouldn't have been afraid. But if he had talked to individuals, then those individuals would be afraid. But what happened was, all of them were afraid. Yeah.
This is after he became a Christian that he wanted to be a part of the church. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes. So they didn't trust him at that point.
Okay.
Maybe he hadn't had enough time to prove through actions.
Okay. That, good observation. Hold on to that. We're going to get there. So, yeah.
He has had plenty of time to go the opposite direction. And now he's got a reputation that he's going to have to downplay. And people are just not going for it. It takes a long time to say, well, okay, I guess you're okay. And he's having to work on that.
Okay. Okay. Again, hold on to that thought. Because right now, I just want to impress upon you my understanding of the situation. He did something. I don't know what it was, but he did something that let the church know that he wanted to be with them. Because it caused all of them to be afraid. Yeah, Carol.
I think that we're sort of missing the point that if he just showed up there with Barnabas and walked in the door, he would have scared the people to death.
Okay.
And so he, being a smart man that he was, made sure that he was welcome and that they understood where he was coming from. He was looking for unity with them. You can't have unity if you're scared to death of somebody.
Okay. So him just coming through the door may have been enough to cause all of them to be afraid. That's a good point. I had a friend who was a Christian who lived in Iran during the time that the Shah was on the throne in Iran. And at that point, Christianity was acceptable in the nation of Iran. The Shah is deposed. They eventually take all of our citizens captives out of the embassy. They hold them for at least a year. Ayatollah Khomeini comes to power. And at that point, to be a Christian in Iran meant you were in danger of being killed. It became an Islamic theocracy. Okay? Now, he eventually left. But he did talk about what it was like to be a Christian in a place where Christians are being persecuted. And one of the things that he said was, if you help to pass the Lord's Supper, that was a clear indication that you were a Christian. All you were doing was passing the elements. Okay? And if there was a spy in the group that day, you could be captured. most probably be killed. So he talked about, you know, they hand you the elements of the Lord's Supper. If you take that, and then you participate, that was like signing your death warrant. I've never been in a situation like that. He eventually had to leave. It left behind his parents. He left his business. He just got on an airplane, told everybody he was going on a buying trip. He went to Fairbanks, Alaska, which to me, you know, why would you go from Iran to Fairbanks, Alaska? But that's where he wound up. That's where I knew him. That's the situation that these Christians are in Jerusalem. They don't know. Maybe Paul is a spy. Somebody said it takes a long time to establish or to overcome an established reputation. You know, how many of us would welcome into our assembly Bill Clinton? That's not a political statement.
No.
The guy has a reputation as a womanizer. How many of us would willingly welcome Epstein? Now, I've lost his first name.
Jeffrey.
Yeah. How many of us would welcome him into the assembly? Yeah.
Should we not welcome them in, but be cautious and try to win their soul?
Okay. You see the nature of the conflict that's going to happen. Somebody says, I don't want him here. And somebody else says, yes, but we have to welcome everyone into our assembly. You can imagine the conflict that was happening. But that's the situation. So, oh, yeah.
I can't imagine not welcoming somebody in who needed to be here.
Okay. That's an interesting observation. We welcome him, and that's kind of the I don't remember who said it. Somebody else may remember who said it. Keep your friends close and keep your enemies closer. You know, you can watch them when they're close. Yeah, Carol.
Well, in our time, we're not worried about persecution. So it's easy for us to say we welcome somebody in. But when somebody has a reputation, not of a sinner, but a reputation of being able to take people away in the dark the next day, it bodes well to have a discussion to find out that, yes, somebody will vouch for that person. And that's what eventually does it. It's not him saying, I'm okay. It's being vouched for.
Okay.
That's what I said.
Okay. So, Barnabas, I'm sorry, Nolan, is that you that has your hand up?
No, Laura does.
I did.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
It reflects more upon me as an individual if I welcome somebody. Your whole point, your whole question reflects more upon me as an individual if I welcome somebody into my church who walked into my church. I'm going to welcome them, yes, because that's the right thing to do.
Okay. Now, understand, as you read this, there is no condemnation of the church in Jerusalem. Make sure we understand that. There's no condemnation offered for the church in Jerusalem. They did eventually welcome him in. They did eventually support him in everything that he did. But there is no condemnation. So How do they go about resolving the conflict? Somebody presents themselves here and says, I would like to worship at this congregation. Let me tell you another story that will illustrate how this conflict can arise. The church in Anchorage that met at Rose Street was a friendly split from the church in Anchorage that, when I lived there, that met on 10th and DeBar. But this all predates me having lived there, and I don't know where they were all meeting. But the church had grown. It was getting too big for the building, so a group that lived in North Anchorage said, we're just going to start a new group out in North Anchorage. After that time, there was a discussion about whether the church, as a church, ought to contribute to orphans' homes. 10th and DeBar, the original group, for the most part, said, yes, this is something that we can do. Rose Street, the group that split from them on a friendly basis, for the most part, studying the scriptures, they came to the conclusion that the church, as an institution, should not be involved in this. One Sunday, and at that time, Rose Street, the group that left, that was not going to support the orphans' homes, numbered about 50. One Sunday, about 75 people from DeBar, from 10th and DeBar, and DeBar, or Ted, do you remember where they worshiped? At that time, was it 10th Street or DeBar? Anyway.
It was DeBar.
Anyway, about 75 people from the big group came and said, we want to worship here. Rose Street said, okay. That afternoon, they scheduled a meeting and they withdrew from everybody that had been there originally. And they could do that because they had the numbers. So they took the building. And Rose Street eventually found a new place. They met in a community building for a while. And then they purchased another building on Rose Street. Built a building on Rose Street. That happened in Anchorage in the 1950s. I don't think, Ted, you weren't even born at that point. And I don't even think your mom and dad were worshiping there at that point. Am I right? And you guys weren't there then.
We didn't go to Alaska until 64.
Okay. Should they have said, we want you to worship here? Or should they have said, we want to examine you? If they had said, we want to examine your intentions, were they being unchristian in saying that? Yeah, you're all
right. Well, we're taught, and they were taught to, especially with a prophet, to test prophet. They were taught to test the word. So when Paul comes to them, or Saul comes to them, it's in their nature for what God tells them to do, to test him and his intentions. And the conflict you're talking about in Alaska, nobody should come and just do what they did. They should have had classes and come to an understanding. I don't understand how they come back into another building and when they left, but that's me.
That was what happened. Yeah, Dean?
Well, just, I don't know, to bring the point more home, In the years that I've been here twice, we've had convicted sex offenders come and want to pledge membership and be a part of the congregation. And listening to this discussion, I think probably the elders handled the situation wrong because people like me knew about it so that I could watch them and have conversations with them and give them the expectations, but they didn't want the congregation to be in an uproar.
Which is, let me interrupt just a minute, which is what happens many times because we have conflict avoidance.
Correct.
We don't want conflict. And so, go ahead.
Well, yeah, and, you know, I think, but that right there speaks to, I guess, the large problem. And it's a different problem that we face today than they face. And we've had this conversation. I wouldn't have to worship with a child sex offender in that day, because he'd be dead. I wouldn't have to worship with a rapist. I wouldn't have to accept that individual, but we do. So we have this time. So how do we do that? You know, I think we let the congregation know. We talk about it as a congregation. We remind the congregation that he's God's children. We impress upon the congregation that people like Andrew and I have eyes on all the time. But that's a tough situation with, you know, we got 15 little kids back here in the back today and some over here. And each one of those parents, they have a different conflict than I have because my kids are grown. So, you know,
right.
And it's one of those things where we have to really soul search to know how to handle that situation. And then as a congregation, we have to realize we're dealing with things in a world that we created, being soft on crime and soft on, but those situations arise. And, you know, how do we handle that as a congregation? Do we let the congregation know, hey, this individual got out of prison, you know, wants to worship here? What do we do? So.
Well, I can tell you from personal experience, a pedophile convinced me that the charges that were brought against him were unreasonable. I helped him get out of prison. He wanted to worship with us. I vouched for him. And ultimately, he wound up abusing some children in the congregation. Okay. I then helped him go back to prison. Yeah.
I read a scripture this morning that talked about how many times do we forgive somebody? And also we have a responsibility as the parents of these children to watch our children.
Yeah.
Those are our responsibility. But as far as the someone asking forgiveness, who am I to say, I'm not forgiving you.
Good point.
If Jesus can forgive him, I can.
If
go
I
ahead.
Understand correctly that the assembly is for the saints, Christians, but people who are not Christians do not come in. So, but if, when someone says they are a Christian, I do think that we should, and they're new. I can't remember. There's a couple of verses that I think that would indicate that we should examine, we watch them, and I think like sex offenders are kind of like they saw Saul, you know, and so like in our day, I'm not exactly sure, but they're supposed to have permission to be around young children. They're supposed to make it known that they have this. Yeah. I think a lot of prayer and men working together would be able to figure out with the wisdom of God, does everyone need to know and how are we going to protect our children? But when someone says they're in Christ, we don't really know whether or not they are. We need to treat them as a Christian, but it doesn't mean that we shouldn't observe.
I mean, yeah.
Even when we don't know someone is a sex offender, they could be. People put on such a good facade that they can be. So we need to be careful and attentive in everything we do.
Yeah.
Everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yeah, go ahead.
So we were asked to forgive people. We're not asked to forget about what they have done, and that includes ourselves. But we don't need to put ourselves into a situation. If that were happening in my congregation, I would pick up and move an hour to go to a different congregation. That doesn't mean I'm not forgiving them, but I'm also not going to give them the opportunity to fall into that again with my own children as a risk.
Okay. Yeah, Margaret?
You don't need to forget. That's where it becomes your responsibility. I know this person is here. I need to protect my child.
Right. Now, yeah, go ahead, Casey.
Well, so this kind of got brought up for Dylan. Dylan and I, when we were in Washington, because there's a church that's right by my parents' house that has a big sign that says, "We love all, we forgive all, we accept murderers, homosexuals, rapists." Like, it has like a big pride flag and says, "Please come one, come all." And I think it's hard because on one hand, you know, as Christians, our job is to forgive and give grace, but also those are horrible situations to put our families and children in, right? Like, to think that we are putting our families in danger, potentially dangerous situations, is very scary. But also, it's not our right to judge, and God is the ultimate decider. And who's to say that they can't change and grow? Because in God's eyes, he says all sin is evil. Right? So just because I lied, that's equal to every other sin. It doesn't make it any better or any... I mean, granted, these things are horrible, and I would never wish that on anybody in the world, but it's like, our job as Christians is to welcome them and hope that they can change, and God is the only one who can decide whether that's true or not.
Okay. Now, I think every one of us would stand up and say, man, if you knew all the things that I did in my past life, you wouldn't want me worshiping here either. Okay? Absolutely. We rely on God for forgiveness. And we're running out of time. Taylor.
Oh, I was just about to say that that's kind of like the glory of having being in the modern day centuries, because we can make accommodations for that, because they don't have to come in person. We have Zoom now.
Well, we do have Zoom.
And and also, since we're the church, not the building, we can go meet them in person if we to preach if we want.
Good point. Yeah, Carol.
We're only looking at this from one point of view. The child molester or the person who comes in with a sin, we have an obligation and they have an obligation to not be put in a situation where they're tempted. So it's not only for the safety of the congregation. You don't put somebody who's been stealing from a company in charge of the collection plates. That's a temptation that person should not have to be put in the situation. The same thing would be if we had somebody who had a problem with that. You would set up rules so that the parents would feel good, but also so that that Christian would not be tempted into sinning.
Okay.
Well, and love is not the same as trust.
Okay, expand on that.
Thank you. Just kind of expose some of myself. My mother was murdered a little over a year ago by my brother. Do I love him? Yes, I do. And my goal would be that he could become a Christian. But I don't know if I could ever trust him. But I still would
love him, and if he had desire to learn of Christ, make sure that he had what he needed to do so and continue in the faith.
Good point.
But now I can never, I don't know that I could ever trust him.
Good point. Yeah, Dean?
Well, yeah, just to kind of wrap it up, the two instances that we had, and I won't name names, but the two instances that we had, those individuals understood the clear boundaries and understood that there was not a time that they were going to be here that they weren't being watched. And without exposing myself too much, were explained the ramifications of crossing the line. So, you know, it's okay. I need to care about the souls of every individual that walked the earth, just as Jesus did. He died for them. But I don't have to allow. I have a picture on my phone of a young man who is traveling the West Coast right now, joining churches, exploiting elderly individuals. When that individual came into the church, I wouldn't turn him away per se. I would let him know, I know who you are. And it's my job. I've been tasked to watch the safety of this congregation. And I take that job very seriously. And you only want to know the nice side of me. But we don't stand at the door and block the door. Heaven forbid I meet Jesus someday and that's held against me. So, you know, it's a very scary thing as a parent. It's a very scary thing as a husband in the world that we live in. But at first, when I first meet an individual, I have to see a soul that Christ died for. I don't have to let the pedophiles teach the children
that. Okay. Yes.
I can't remember who it is in the Old Testament, but he was going to go to war, and there were very few, but they were against huge, and they were afraid, and they opened his eyes, and there were thousands of angels around him. I think that to be true for us as well.
True. Good point. Now, let me just conclude with a couple of other things. Remember, God adds to the number. I don't add to the number. God knows the heart. That's Acts 2, verse 47. The Lord added to the church daily such as should be saved. Exclusion, that I might be a part of, does not preclude or exclude God's addition. There are no partially associated Christians. Okay? There is no censure of the Jerusalem disciples for what they did. Barnabas does not censure them. He just points out how Paul has changed. Okay, so we could go on for a long time, but we've run out of time. This is the kind of conflict that arises in churches, and we have to be aware of. We have to find a way to deal with it. Okay, it's not the elders that make a decision. The elders can be involved, but the elders don't make the decision. So we'll continue with our discussion a little bit later. And if you have further questions, we can talk about that even more.